vous en prie. Alors, il est ici. Son exposant est allé par tous les membres. Et comme vous savez, pour inaugurer l'exposition le lendemain de l'incendie, on a la chance d'avoir avec nous deux artistes de l'exposition, donc Anne Thurlow et Jordan Mokie-Kolesnik. Et on va avoir les enfants en entretien avec le commissaire de l'expo et artiste Steve Chiafran. Donc, je tiens à remercier chaleureusement les artistes d'être venus de si loin pour être avec nous. Thank you for coming from so far away. Alors, Aaron est venu de Miami et Jordan de Los Angeles. Alors, si vous êtes curieux au sujet de leur parcours, on a des biographies des artistes du commissaire imprimées pour vous, alors vous pouvez les consulter durant la soirée. Donc, je ne terminerai pas dans les présentations formelles. Je veux simplement vous souhaiter une très belle soirée à l'école et passer la parole à Steve Chiafran.
Merci beaucoup, Stéphanie. Alors, bonsoir à toutes et à tous. Je vous remercie chaleureusement pour votre présence ce soir. Je veux redire également toute ma gratitude à Stéphanie Chabot ainsi qu'à toute l'équipe du Centre des arts et du Scol pour m'avoir invité à assurer un premier commissariat. Merci Scol pour votre engagement et votre audace, toujours nouvelle. Je remercie enfin de tout cœur Jordan et Aaron qui sont venus, comme le disait Stéphanie, de très loin pour être avec nous ce soir. Avant d'entamer cette discussion avec eux, j'aimerais vous présenter brièvement cette exposition. En consultant Météo Média hier, je suis tombé sur un article de plus en plus banal, indiquant qu'une vague de chaleur historique affecte présentement la Californie. Des records mondiaux y ont été battus. Je cite, « La vallée de la mort a effleuré un record planétaire mardi » avec un mercure de 51,8 degrés Celsius, tandis qu'à Sacramento, le mercure a atteint 46,7 degrés Celsius, battant le précédent record de 45,5 degrés Celsius, établi le 17 juillet 1925, il y a 97 ans donc. L'article se termine en rappelant que la Californie est plus que jamais vulnérable aux feux de forêt en raison de la sécheresse ainsi que l'augmentation du mercure. Nous n'avons pas besoin de chercher longtemps pour constater l'ampleur des brasiers qui menacent notre planète. C'est dans ce contexte, pour le moins affolant, qu'a été conçue l'exposition le lendemain de l'incendie de The Edge of the Fire. Vous remarquerez que j'ai voulu éviter avec elle toute spectacularisation, toute image saisissante des méga-incendies. J'ai voulu en quelque sorte la penser cette question à tête froide. Comme le veut T.G. DeMoss, ces images stupéfiantes sont abondamment relayées par les médias de masse américains et sur les réseaux sociaux, mais elles sont rarement reliées au changement climatique. Elles nous placent alors dans une position à la fois passive et perverse, parce qu'ils nous permettent d'assister à la destruction comme un objet esthétique sublime qu'on peut capter et diffuser et dont on peut conséquemment facilement s'échapper. Par-delà leur discipline et leur contexte de création, les œuvres romanesques, vidéographiques, picturales et conceptuelles de Charlotte Brontë, Stefan Brunmann, Jordan Mokie-Kolesnik, en collaboration avec Robert Plattner, Gene Reeves, Aaron Thurlow, Lawrence Weiner et moi-même, qui sont présentés dans cette exposition, nous proposent au contraire des visions, je crois, profondes et nuancées du feu. Élément dévastateur, le feu peut aussi être un redoutable vecteur de changement. Alors, Jordan et Aaron nous font justement le plaisir de venir partager avec nous leur vision ce soir. Je crois qu'on devrait commencer sans plus attendre cette discussion. If you don't mind, Aaron, I will start with Jordan. And then we'll switch back. I'll do my best. I do most of my interviews during the pandemic, but I try to be understandable. So, Jordan, le titre de ta vidéo, Jenny Los Angeles, laisse supposer que cette ville occupe une place prépondérante dans ton œuvre. Comme si, à l'instar d'Antoinette, elle était un personnage à part entière. Tu m'as déjà dit, Jordan, que Los Angeles est une ville dystopique. Peux-tu nous en dire un peu plus, s'il te plaît, à ce sujet? Quel impact cette ville a-t-elle sur ton art et ta vie?
Oui, merci Steve, merci tout le monde d'être là ce soir. Ah. Oui, c'est vrai que Los Angeles, c'est une place que j'aime beaucoup. J'ai déménagé là-bas il y a 4 ans et je me sentais vraiment chez moi très bientôt. Et c'est vrai, je veux pas comme donner trop d'informations sur le. Parce que je connais les questions en avance. Mais il y a vraiment des trucs qui sont particuliers à Los Angeles qui est vraiment différent et qui a fait une connexion avec les idées qui font partie de l'histoire de Jane Eyre. Mais c'est vrai que c'est vraiment un personnage de la ville lui-même. Je pense que le mot dystopique, c'est un peu. C'est vraiment utilisé beaucoup. Moi, quand j'ai pensé à ces questions-là, j'ai pensé. Mais je constate que Los Angeles est vraiment une ville de l'avenir, peut-être pas dystopique, mais parce que l'écologie de Californie du Sud s'est habituée au désastre. Donc, moi, je pense que le restant de l'Amérique du Nord, ça va devenir plus comme Los Angeles dans l'avenir. Donc, dans ce sens-là, Los Angeles, c'est comme une image de l'avenir pour tout le monde. Avec les fréquences des incendies. Donc, dans ce sens-là, c'est peut-être une façon d'envisager comment survivre pendant le désastre qui va venir. Mais c'est aussi pour moi un love letter à la ville, cette œuvre-là, juste parce que c'est vrai, il y a un sens, il y a un feeling de la ville qui est très particulier. Donc, ouais, je l'aime beaucoup. En tout cas.
Merci. Erin, your works are complex and can be read in many different ways. For example, watching your Dark Time series, I often think of a quote by Walter Benjamin taken from his thesis on the concept of history, in which he says, I quote, "The true picture of the past flits by. The past can be sized only as an image which flashes up at the instant when it can be recognized and is never seen again." Stephanie told me that by contemplating them, she had the impression of looking at our era through a microscope, as if it were already an ancient and begun era. Although I know that you prefer to let visitors interpret your work, could you please tell us briefly how you select the images that you isolate in your paintings?
Yeah. Thanks, you, and thank you to Skoll for inviting me to participate and to everyone who showed up tonight. I apologize, I do not speak French. I just feel terrible that I just missed everything that Jordan just said. It's not really interesting. I'll try and get into Tony later. The question of history and Walter Benjamin's take on it, I'm not quite sure if I understood that, but I think the way you described Stephanie, talking about the work made sense, and I think that the title, dark times, which is obviously, or if not obvious, is kind of a play on the fact that all of these images are from the New York Times and they're very dark. Kind of this idea that it is a snapshot of the present in a way, you know, a very kind of narrow view. If you depending on what you think of the fact that all these images were compiled by the New York Times, and so it's very particular. But yeah, I think ever since I don't know, Andy Warhol or Richard Prince, the idea that you would just sort of take a picture seemed kind of, and to try and describe things seemed kind of impossible, and instead just drawing from the pictures that already exist to create something of a view of the present seemed to make more sense to you. So this is just kind of my way of compiling a kind of a little movie or something like that of our moment. And how I think about them, they're so random and yet poignant to me, I guess. I try and be as generous and kind of Catholic in my tastes as I choose images, so I don't leave too much out. But yeah, I just look for things that seem to resonate. I don't know what I could say beyond that. You know, it's not. If you look at something as rich as the Times, you can really just pick and choose. All the images are amazing, even the advertisements. So yeah, it's kind of like a gold mine of stuff if you're willing to steal it, right? Yeah, that answers the question.
Thank you. Jordan, sur ton site web, tu décris ta vidéo en précisant qu'elle s'inspire de l'histoire de Jenner pour établir un lien entre la transféminité et les incendies de forêt destructeurs dans le sud de la Californie. Y a-t-il, selon toi, des liens qui unissent les luttes queer et la cause environnementale face notamment à la crise climatique?
Oui, je pense qu'il faut dire au début que c'est vraiment les gens avec moins de moyens qui souffrent le plus dans ces crises-là. Mais pour moi, il y a beaucoup des gens queer qui a des moins de moyens, qui peuvent déménager. Mais pour moi, le premier exemple que j'ai fait, c'est la métaphore de féminité et de trans. C'est vraiment parce que la policy en Californie avec les incendies, c'est de supprimer chaque feu au début, immédiatement. Et ça, le collège n'a pas évolué comme ça. C'est vraiment évolué d'avoir des feux. Et quand on supprime chaque feu immédiatement, le fuel, ça accrue. Et les feux après ça, c'est vraiment plus fort. Et c'est plus disruptif. Donc, il y a vraiment une connexion avec ça, avec les gens et les gens trans. C'est vraiment une métaphore simple et évidente, je pense. Si on supprime, moi je dirais que c'est simple. Je pense trop fort.
Non, je m'excuse,
j'étais
thinking
out loud. Non, ça va. Donc, pour moi, la connexion. J'hésite de dire que c'est tout queer, c'est parce que je pense que queer c'est trop utilisé dans l'academic theory maintenant, c'est vraiment trop utilisé. Mais pour moi, il y a vraiment une connexion claire entre ça. Donc c'est pour ça que je pense que l'œuvre, ça pose l'idée que c'est pas toujours mal de brûler des trucs. Donc, je pense que la connexion avec, pour les gens non-binaires ou transfemmes, la connexion c'est de brûler quelque chose dans soi-même, c'est productif, c'est un type de transformation. Et quand le désastre arrive, on peut choisir ce qu'on veut garder ou laisser avec dans le feu, peut-être. Ça a le sens. Mm-hmm. Donc, c'est ce que la métaphore, c'est le beating heart of the c'est vraiment comme the delivery of it.
Thank you. Erin, in an email talking about your use of newspapers as a pictorial support, you mentioned the works of the famous American painters, Jasper Jones. When Jasper Jones made his American flags, lining the background of his conveyances with newspaper, the print media was still hugely popular. And today, however, we watch the news more on television than on our cell phone. And I suspect that to make your Dark Times series, it was more practical to use to paint on newspaper. But I wonder if what significance does this gesture have today? What do you think?
I'm an old man, Steve. I don't know what you kids do these days with your phones. It would be easy to print a picture from the internet,
from a website,
do this with Photoshop, but I think I like the materiality is super, super important to me. There's something about, an idea of I come to this from a really sculptural place, and I think that it almost has taken me out of it because it's so image-based, but I still was really trying originally from the beginning to do something with the material of the newspaper because it seems so strange and almost anachronistic, like you say. And I think I like a lot of little things. Maybe things that are even older than me. There's something about these that look like old movies that I really like, and I think that, working with these kind of older materials sort of suits my taste or something. But as material, and the fact that it will degrade, I think over time becomes really,
really fragile.
I didn't even know if they would make it here, or if it could still be together, because the newspapers are super non-archival, and I don't treat them particularly gently. And this, even the paint is just cheap. Not even good spray paint, cheap spray paint. it's all, borrowed time. And I think that that's, with the idea of this idea of a fire burning. And when I first started these books, they looked like they had been burnt, and I really liked that. And it kind of like added to this idea of their ephemerality or the contingency of the project. Mm-hmm. So I think that I like that, I bring up people like Jasper Johns so that I'm mentioned in the same sentence in a talk with Jasper Johns, but I think that he was someone also who was struggling with this concept of image and material, and so in that way it seems like maybe I'm caught in that same question, but it's still a question, I guess, for me too.
Good. Thank you. Jordan Surrealisé, General Los Angeles en 2020, en plein confinement. Est-ce que la pandémie de la COVID-19 a eu un impact significatif sur cette œuvre?
Oui, c'est vrai, mais je pense que ça va prendre plusieurs années avant qu'on veut voir la pandémie dans les médias. L'œuvre était créée par
vraiment peindre. Avec, ouais, avec le pandémie, ça a créé le programme de Canada Council qui est subventionné là et tout ça. Mais quand j'ai fait le tournage, je voulais pas vraiment montrer le pandémie, mais je dirais, ok, je peux donner un espoir. L'œuvre s'était inspirée parce que moi j'étais chanceux, j'ai profité d'une subvention à l'employment, j'étais congédié à le commencement. Puis là, dans le lockdown, j'ai constaté un trou dans le plafond de mon garde-robe. Donc là, j'étais comme, ok, il y a quoi dans la grenier Donc il fallait fabriquer un escalier pour entrer dans le trou. Donc c'était comme 10 pouces de, avec, je pense que c'était 16 pouces de large, c'était vraiment spécifique. Donc il fallait fabriquer tout ça. Donc je fais ça, mon atelier c'est chez moi. J'avais tous mes outils de bois. Donc j'ai fabriqué l'escalier et je suis entré dans le grenier. Et c'était dans ces moments-là que j'ai vraiment comme, fait la connexion avec. J'avais lu Jane Eyre et White Sargasso aussi. Et là, c'est tout connecté dans ces moments-là. Je suis entré dans le grenier. Je pensais à Antoinette, à Jane Eyre. Puis là, le Canada Council. Donc, c'est comme ça que le s'est passé.
Très bien. Merci. I have too many papers. Erin, you started the Darshan series around 2017, I guess. The same year Donald Trump became the 45th President of the United States. In a very beautiful text, you talk about the opacity of time. You also mentioned that the steps that have been taken to impeach the former president. I'm wondering, do you see your work as politically engaged art?
Thank you. So I started working with newspapers, not specifically in this way, but yeah, right after that. Yeah. 2017 beginning, and that wasn't even when I came up with the title, but it suits the moment. It's funny if you, I have a kind of a deep website where I show too much old work. There's a lot of work. You can go see just other things I've made. It's a little bit. Abstract, detached, or something like that. And this was this time at which I was really glued to the television, watching the. I don't mean television, right? It's the internet. But I watched TV on my laptop. But I was terrified, and there was all this crazy news coming out. It was really. I mean, we live just not very far from Mar-a-Lago, and so all this has just seemed very present, obviously, and important. And I think that I'd never wanted to make political art. I kind of always had almost an aversion to that kind of idea that that art could deal effectively with politics, and so I would look back at art from like the 80s and all these artists that I liked that were really responding to the politics of the time, the AIDS crisis, or these really things that seemed in maybe the 2000s or something as a long time ago, and I wasn't quite sure how to make that connection and how to think about art making or kind of poetics as it would relate to a kind of something as concrete as as politics, but I think maybe the last few years, there's something about a crisis, right, that collapses this idea of poetics, maybe, and so all of a sudden, those things that maybe are abstractions or something, they don't function as effectively. You have to be much more direct during a crisis. Yes. And during a crisis, that the only way maybe to work is in a very, very direct way. You don't have to be abstract, because if you are speaking to the moment, it resonates. And so maybe that's how I got there, but it definitely, it's still difficult to look across this wall and decide that I have some maybe political viewpoint, although you kind of started talking to me this way, and I was like, oh, maybe I'm more obvious than I think. But I'm very, very aware politically when I make art now, in a way that I wasn't before, and now it feels like the only way to work, in a way. But maybe in a year I won't feel that way, hopefully. Because it requires a crisis, I guess. But maybe we're in this kind of time now of an endless crisis that will kind of determine what kind of things get made.
Everything will be all right, you know. Jordan, Jenny Los Angeles contient plusieurs références littéraires et théoriques. Je songe notamment à l'essai de Mike Davis, The Case for Letting Malibu Burn. La littérature et la philosophie servent-elles souvent de déclencheurs pour ton travail?
J'ai une réponse très courte qui est non, pas d'habitude. Cette œuvre-là, c'est vraiment unique pour moi. Et je pense que c'est juste le sujet, toutes les références à juste. Ça fait une combinaison. Je pense que je suis moins inspiré par ces références que d'autres artistes, peut-être. Je ne sais pas. Mais pas tout le temps. Je ne sais pas. Mon prochain film, ça va être une histoire originale. Ouais, mais cette œuvre-là, c'était vraiment comme spécifique avec la référence de Jane Eyre, de Los Angeles, de Mike Davis. Je dirais à tout le monde, si vous êtes intéressé à cette idée, il y a un écrivain, Mike Davis, qui parle de l'histoire de Los Angeles et Californie du Sud. Et vraiment, vraiment intéressant. Mais j'aime beaucoup l'écriture comme une façon de générer des idées. Donc ça, je dirais vraiment fait partie de mon travail. Mm-hmm. Et l'œuvre, ça a vraiment commencé avec tous les mots, tous les trucs qui sont dits. C'était vraiment la structure pour l'œuvre. Donc, j'ai commencé avec tous les mots, puis là on a consulté les images. Ouais.
Erin, when I asked you how to write the labels of your work, you mentioned me. I consider this as a single ongoing project rather than individual works. Each exhibited iteration could also be considered unique in terms of material. You also asked me to specify pages from the New York Times with spray paint as displayed by Steve Gerson, or the creator. Can you tell us more about the changes that each new exhibition of your work brings? How does being and contextualized change its meaning or its scope?
Like I said, I started this work back a few years ago, and I think it was I had this idea that I would have shown it more by now, because there haven't been many shows over that time period. I think when I wrote that, I was kind of trying to imagine how I thought about showing and having the intervention of a curator, which I really like, and I have come to really just cherish kind of when somebody touches my work or decides to interact with it or engage with it and then display it. And so it was kind of, I was really trying to give you this kind of opportunity to, you know, do whatever you wanted, because I've done an exhibition before, and I thought maybe it would be different, although it looks very similar to the way I had it before. Maybe it's the best way, I don't know. It seemed pretentious also, like I should, maybe I almost thought of writing you right back and saying, oh, that's too much, don't worry, just say it, you know, make it more simple. I don't know, like my touch on this work is so light, right, with just a little spray paint on somebody else's newspaper, on somebody else's photographs, and it almost feels barely mine already, and so the idea that you would then do something with it, that's almost like just passing that along and you know, just throwing you the football and letting you run. Is that enough? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. Actually, it gave me a great freedom.
Yeah.
The ability to display the
burn them. Burn them.
Oh, no.
Good. Thanks.
Okay, I have two small questions for both of you. In one of his poems from his collection entitled Le Clair-Obscur, a French writer, Jean Cocteau, wrote, if your house was burning down and you could only save one thing, what would it be? The answer is, I would save a fire. And I'm wondering, what would you save from your burning house?
My laptop. Is my family out?
Just an object.
To save an object? Gosh, who could be Jean Cocteau? That's a good answer. Because everything's on the laptop, right?
Yeah.
The laptop. Not these.
I think it's a good answer. I have the in mind that I would save many, many books.
But there's many books books on the laptop. Many more books.
That's beautiful, though. So is the idea, like, if he saved the fire, then the house wouldn't burn down? Is that the idea?
Maybe.
Right?
Maybe it's more like a spiritual fire.
Spiritual. So you're, like, loving the villain, the forces of destruction. So it's like, you preempt your own destruction. You're joining forces with... Uh-huh. Yeah, you're basically... Okay, got it.
Okay, and finally... Would you like to tell us what are you working on right now?
So I'm working on a short film, which is going to be a science fiction, and it is going to be about 20 to 30 minutes long. Science fiction in the kind of more speculative fiction, so not spacecraft form, but the work is going to imagine what it would be like to live, humans living on a planet that's 39 light years from Earth, which actually exists. It's called an eyeball planet. So this kind of planet is locked to the sun. So night and day are geographical. There's no time. Time is static. And so my film is going to kind of imagine alternate ways of living with lots of queer undertones. So basically, if we live on this planet, what are the ways that we could live? How do we change our lifestyle and our culture based on the ecology that surrounds us and the actual, that's what I'm working on.
Okay.
I've been working with text a lot, and I don't know, you follow my Instagram feed, and it's been these kind of works that kind of collapse the text with the newspapers as kind of one piece, and just I'm working with this idea of language, which I think I came to from as I was just making these newspaper pieces. It almost just became impossible to just, I was just reading things in headlines constantly, and it almost became a way of creating like almost a ready-made Lawrence Wiener kind of thing. There's this stream of textual phrases, and I started I came up with a typeface that could be based on the way that the newspaper is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'd have to see it in the images, but it started very very much in this idea of using found material, and the text is mostly found, and I've become really intrigued by the starting with using other people's text, everything from those newspapers to hip hop and post punk lyrics, and then children's poetry was a big part of my last piece, the last sculptural text work that I did, and now I'm really fascinated by just these AI language programs, and because it's so easy. It's so nice. Text is you know, you have to come up with language and you have to have ideas, and it's so nice to just have have it there, and then you can do something with it, right? So maybe working with some kind of an artificial intelligence language program to go along. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for what you do.
Thank you.
Merci Steve pour tes questions. C'est très agréable, très agréable.